As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And welcome everyone to the Total Soccer Show. It's a German themed show, so I'm going with a German introduction. My name is Taylor Rockwell. With me today is a man who I hope has fully recovered from his version of the Hot Ones Challenge. It's Manuel Veit. Manuel, are you feeling better after your battle with legally certified hot wings?
Yeah, I thought the Weber was a joke. Well, joke is on me, I guess.
So what, are you a hot wings connoisseur? I saw you posting about this on Twitter, that you signed your waiver, you ate your wings. I appreciated your breakdown of the flavor and the intensity. I also appreciated your personal mild breakdown when the heat really intensified.
Oh, I love hot food. I really do. I enjoy hot food quite a bit. And it's really seldom that it completely blindsides me. And they did. I was destroyed. I absolutely destroyed. And you know, it was one of those things where, first of all, shout out to the guys that did this, the new hot stuff, I think they called it. It's a local company here in Victoria. Fantastic flavors with all the wings. It was just the really hot ones that like you had to sign a waiver for. And it was something like you bite into it and you're like, this is actually really good. You know, like I assume it was like some Scorpio pepper, like probably some habanero in there. And then you're like, you eat a second one, you're still okay. And then,
And then it intensifies.
And it just intensifies. It gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And
hey, that's a good way to segue into talking about Schalke.
It all started so well, didn't it? Yeah,
it really did. And then it got worse.
The first two bites were all good. And
oh, man. I did not mean for that to be the segue, but it does feel appropriate. Now, there's a burning sensation at Schalke, and I think everybody's trying to figure out what happened and why they made the decisions they did.
It's definitely a flaming hot mess to stay on the hot wing.
So we are going to talk about a lot of different Bundesliga clubs, or at least a few of them. For people who have given me stick about not talking about Wolfsburg, I do have a couple questions about them. We'll see if we get to them, because I want to start with Schalke, who Bundesliga commentator James Thorogood referred to as a club who continued to die a new death every weekend. That felt bleak, but also accurate. This past weekend, they lost 5-1 to Stuttgart and had, to use Manuel's terminology, a purge. Who has been given their marching orders at the club, and how much stock are you putting in the rumors that a player mutiny was a factor in that decision?
Oh, wow.
you can take those as two parts. Let's go with who's gone and why, and then we can talk about what the player involvement.
First of all, I'm a massive fan of James Thorogood. We have him on our show quite regularly. So those who don't know about the Gegenpressing, our weekly Bundesliga podcast, we have him on there regularly. He's a wonderful human being. And a real wordsmith. I haven't heard him say this, but I think he's, as always, quite bang on. Yeah, it's who has been fired at Schalke. So let's go through the list because it's a substantial
one. It's a list.
You know, first we'll start with the coach. This is coach, it was coach number five, right? No, coach number five that was fired.
Yeah.
So Christian Groß gone. Sporting director, director of sport. We have to make sure that we get the differences here because this is important later on in the show, right? Director of sport, Jochen Schneider, gone. Team manager, or sometimes also referred to as the sporting director, Sascha Rieder, gone. Assistant coach, Rainer Wiedmeier, gone. And you know, for good measures, they threw in the athletic trainer in there as well. Mm-hmm. Poor guy. You know, I feel like Werner Leuthard, I'm not sure what he exactly did wrong, but fired as well, right? So yeah, it's a substantial list. You know, in fairness, director of sport Jochen Schneider was supposed to be gone at the end of the season anyways. Christian Groß would have probably been gone at the end of the season as well. Sascha Rieder did surprise me a little bit because, you know, he seemed like the person that they had kind of as a backup in charge of Schneider and sort of like grooming as the man to maybe eventually take over. But I guess, you know, if you do a purge, you might as well do it right and get rid of everyone.
Wow.
Yeah, we're laughing, but it's kind of comical because like the situation is so nuts. You know, we were talking about the third largest football institution in Germany, you know, and that's, if you include the DFB, right? The DFB being the largest, the German Football Association, the Bayern Munich being the second largest, and then Schalke. Schalke larger, have more members than Borussia Dortmund. And a lot of people keep forgetting that. So it's a substantial club with 200,000 members. You know, it's a big institution. And they have gone from being, you know, second in the Bundesliga under Domenico Tedesco a few years ago. Although that was a year where, you know, you could finish second with 450 points to essentially getting relegated to it being potentially one of the worst teams to ever be relegated from the Bundesliga. And that's an achievement, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is. It's not maybe the most like noble of achievements, or the most celebrated of achievements. I want to talk about some of those players who might have been involved or might not have been involved. But since you brought it up about that 2018 season, I was looking it up. As you said, that's when they finished second. They brought in Bentaleb, they brought in Harit, they brought in Konoplyanka, to name just a few. And it feels like, oh, they were bringing in people. Things are still positive. And yet I look at that squad and it looks very, very familiar in that there are a lot of the same names. It doesn't seem like they've moved people on, brought in new faces. So while they're finishing second and that seems like a success, it also feels like that is sort of the start of things not going well. Would you say the roots are there? Do the roots go even further back?
Yeah, there was a lot of money spent. I mean, we had the Money League come out the other day, right? And it's from Deloitte. I believe they do it every year. And Schalke, one of the 20 biggest clubs in Europe financially. So it's a substantial team, but they have spent a lot of money on, you know, names. And I really struggled to use a different terminology for this because Nabil Bentaleb, yeah, that's a name. Yevgen Konoplyanka, such an odd transfer, right?
Yeah.
Amina Harit, you see flashes of him doing well, and every once in a while you think like, okay, this is a talent that could maybe one day be a good player, but then you see all these other things, these other issues that creep up on him, and it just seems like there was a lot of deals put in place where it was almost players being signed by name through various networks without the actual structure of the club in mind. And then at the same time, you have players leaving on free transfers, or, you know, in the case of Leroy Sané, they thought that they're going to get these 50 million euros from Manchester City, and they did. And then that money not being really well reinvested into the club, right? I mean, any other club in Europe, they would have taken that money and put it into the infrastructure, but they put it into guys like Bentaleb that they paid 20 million euros for, or like Konoplyanka, would they also paid a substantial amount of money for. And it doesn't seem like there ever was a plan in place to really build a homogeneous group of players, right? And whenever they came close to maybe building a homogeneous group of players, you would have players that really identified with the club leave on free transfers. And that's a theme that I think is really quite interesting. The amount of player capital that was wasted at this club, not only by the current regime, who I actually don't really blame. All the people that have been recently purged I have a hard time blaming them because they were basically trying to build something on a very shaky foundation.
So what do you think is responsible for that shaky foundation? Because there are just, like, to your point, there are so many players. You could form a very good starting 11 with players that have left Schalke on a free or for very little money. I even forgot Mesut Ozil would be on that list. That, like, they've lost so many names, Manuel Neuer in there as well. Like, I know part of that is policy, that they're just kind of not willing to negotiate with Bayern Munich, but also I feel like some of it is just sort of short-sightedness. So who are the people who maybe, or who is the person who you would sort of point to as being responsible for the largest share of what's gone wrong at Schalke?
Oh, that's such a difficult question, because I do have culprits in mind, but you know, you have to be so careful with what you say. We point fingers to, because we're talking about large amounts of money. Mm-hmm. And let's use deals that raise your eyebrows instead. And I think people can come to the right conclusion looking at who was in charge at the time and thinking of what may have gone wrong. Let's do it that way. I always have to think of Alexander Nübel. He is a player that got promoted to be the number one goalkeeper in Schalke's squad. The Nübel's management asked for a long time to have his contract renewed, right? Because there was a clause in there that if he doesn't play a certain amount of games, he would automatically be allowed to go on loan to another team. And if he does play a certain amount of games, he would get an automatic contract extension for a single year and then be a free agent the year after, right? That clause was overlooked or forgotten or not communicated well within the club's board at the time, you know, and led to more or less Alexander Nübel leaving on a free transfer to Bayern Munich. And that's the sort of oversight that cannot happen. I mean, we're talking about a goalkeeper that on the open market would have probably gone for 30 million euros.
As far as you understand, sorry to interrupt for a moment, but like how, because to me, when you think about these clubs that are dealing with so much money and dealing with so much international coverage and people looking at their finances and big name players, like I have this expectation, this understanding that they're this 24th century organization where everything is organized and streamlined and figured out. And that just feels like such a relatable mistake of like, oh yeah, we forgot to write down when that thing expired, or we forgot to write down the specific terms of that. Like, is that a commonplace thing as you understand it, or does that feel like a problem unique to clubs that maybe aren't as organized as others?
It's the sort of thing that happens to you in Football Manager, isn't it?
It really is. And that's kind of where that's a more succinct way of putting it, is that feels like a thing that I would do when I've been playing FIFA or Football Manager for a couple hours, get a little bit lazy and forget certain things that are in there that then end up costing me.
Only that you can't go to your backup save to fix it.
Right, exactly. I'm sure they tried.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's the sort of thing that cannot happen if you want to be on that sort of level. And I mean, it runs through the club, right? I mean, Leon Goretzka is another example that left on a free transfer. And here's a play. I mean, so many people are blaming Bayern for gobbling up yet another free deal, right? But the truth is that Schalke did not ensure that this player was on a long-term deal. So, you know, there's again capital just leaving. Max Meyer, I mean, I understand that the agent was difficult to deal with, but and that his career then at Crystal Palace wasn't the best, right? So that's maybe a little bit of a saving grace for Schalke in retrospect, that it didn't work out for him at Crystal Palace. But he was a very important player for them at the time, and they let him walk for free and never really were able to replace him. And that is the sort of stuff where you just throw your hands over your head and think like, how is this possible, right? So yeah, I think it doesn't bode well for the people that were in charge before Schneider. And I mean, Schalke was always a club that was very chaotic. Let's don't talk around it. I mean, even before Schneider's predecessor Christian Heidel, Axel Schuster, and all the other guys that were in charge, there was other people that also, you know, had problems running this club, whether it was on them or maybe the structure of the club or maybe on Tönnies, you know, the all-powerful president who had to step down because of racist remarks. And, you know, to his credit, financed this club more or less through his philanthropy. We cannot forget that. And I think that it's not a coincidence that Tönnies rightfully has been gone, right? Because of what he said, someone who says racist things should not be in charge of a football club. There's no two opinions about this. But at the same time, it's no coincidence that once his philanthropy kind of ended and he was kind of gone, a lot of things even further broke at the club, right? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't speak well for the entire structure of what's going on at Schalke. And no. I mean, that's just like, that, and then you're talking fundamentals, right? You're talking about a BM of 200,000 people, club membership, club, Schalke fans with a lot of influence and power. But I see also just the fact that, that the decision, that the decision making process or the people that get put into the club to make the decision, it's kind of like a revolving door. You know, there's no stability here. And to say, okay, this is maybe due because this is a large membership club, kind of closes the eyes towards the fact that Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich are also large membership run clubs that, you know, they have their own individual problems at time, but in the grand scheme of things are very well run, right?
Well, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, if you don't mind me interjecting,
yeah.
Because, like, to your point about Schalke letting players leave or letting players leave for cheap, like, that's the thing that I also equate with, say, Borussia Dortmund, the aforementioned, where whether it's Jadon Sancho and they have their price and that's what they want, or Robert Lewandowski, we're not selling him, we'll let his contract expire and then you can have him. It feels like they, at times, take that same approach. I think my assumption is that they do it from a more organized, planned, structured approach. That might just be my assumption, and I would love for you to correct me, because it could well be that they maybe are needing to look at Schalke and treat them as a cautionary tale and change some things. But I guess my underlying assumption is that Dortmund have a plan in place, an idea of how they want to go about recruiting and selling players. Schalke, maybe it's a bit more mismatched, a bit more, we'll figure it out on the day.
There's one very big fundamental difference between the two. Between the three, sorry, because I'm going to throw Bayern in there as well, right?
Sure.
The three largest membership clubs in the Bundesliga. And the difference between Bayern, Dortmund on one hand and Schalke on the other hand is that Bayern and Dortmund have established professional companies that run the professional departments of the football clubs. So in Dortmund's case, they went on the stock market, right? The chair company that had a very poor start to its beginning because they went almost bankrupt in the early 2000s, right? But have since recovered under new leadership and are now one of the wealthiest clubs in European football. They're also on that money list. They're very high up on that money list, right? But they essentially established a professional company that runs the football operation as a separate entity. And the members basically elect people to run to this company, right? And I think that is a huge difference. And Bayern Munich have the same thing. Bayern are what they call a closed joint stock company, right? So they're not openly traded on the stock market, but they give out shares to certain companies like Allianz is an example, Adidas is an example. Those are the kind of, you know, those are the kind of influences that they have at the club. And again, the members elect a president who then also serves on the board, right? But there is an actual professional entity that operates and oversees the operations of the club. And other teams in Germany that also have large membership bases have undergone similar processes with mixed results. You know, sometimes these things take time. Stuttgart is a recent example that right after they went professionalized, the board went down, but now seemed to be under very good leadership. Hamburg is another example where it's been very poorly run, right? Schalke have not gone through professionalization yet, and there is quite a lot of resistance among the members to actually undergo this process, to go from just being a membership club to actually have a professional entity running the football operations. That's not in place at Schalke at the moment. There's a board that is quite large, and before we hack on to the size of the board, most football boards in German football are quite large. The decision-making, the fact that there's membership basis in the background, you know, having a word means that there is board selected Biden members in any case, even if there's a professional company running it. But Schalke's board is quite large and it's completely run by its members, which can make operations a little bit more difficult.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Well, let's talk about the operations then, because Schalke find themselves in this precarious position. I did see some outlets spinning this as them trying to like desperately figure things out to save themselves from relegation. That feels like a very generous way to put this. To me, it felt like clearing house, getting some people off the books, getting a structure in place for when they're relegated. But I also saw reports that they have a total debt of around 250 million euros. So how do you think, this is a huge question that's probably not for you, I won't even ask you how do they get out of this. I think what I'll ask is, what is the structure to sort of deal with a crisis like this? Because I think some clubs you've got the one person who's overseeing everything. Some clubs you've got a lot of responsibilities delegated. How do you see Schalke's structure enabling them to get out of this, or maybe more likely not helping them get out of this?
I think they will have to privatize. I think that's the only thing you can do at the moment. And that means, you know, forming a company that runs the soccer operations, the club, just like Dortmund and Bayern have done, right? And then selling minority shares, like you're allowed to in German football to do so, right? Up to 49.9% of the commanding shares, and you're allowed to actually off your football operations. You're allowed to sell even more as long as the membership, you know, the membership club has a controlling stake. Like Hertha is a good example. They have sold, top of my head, 60% of their club, right, to Windhorst.
Yeah,
but that's only the company that runs the football operation, and the voting shares are still 51+1, right? So the membership club still owns 51.1% of the voting shares on the board. So they're nominally still in control, right? But the club. Is actually the club that runs the football operation is owned by someone else who of course still has to run in tune with the membership club that's in the background. And I think Schalke will probably have to look at a scenario like that where they say, okay, well, we have to privatize the football operations. We'd have to take everything from the first team to the second team, maybe the top youth teams, and privatize them, create a new joint stock company or you know, a limited company or whatever you want to call it. There's many different forms of company structures that you can introduce in German football, and then sell some of those shares in order to raise capital. That's really the only solution at this point. Now, the question is, of course, who in their right mind is willing to do that at the moment? Who in their right mind is going to step in and invest that sort of money, right? Who in their right mind is willing to buy shares in a club that has 250 million euros aboutish in debt, possibly. You know, we have to always be careful when we use numbers like that. So possibly in debt of 250 million euros. And that's a very difficult question to answer. And that gets us back to the thought that really there's only one man that can do it. And that's the guy that they kicked out. And that's Tönnies, right? Because like Gelsenkirchen isn't Munich. It's not Hamburg. It's not Berlin. It's not even Stuttgart. It's a place in Germany that doesn't have a lot of investors willing to invest in a club like that.
I've never been there. Like is it similar to like the plight that the Manchester clubs face, where it's just not the most fun place to live year round? Is it the, because I know it has the industrial background, it has the mining background. Is it more just of an industrial city and that's a big part of it?
Yeah, it's that's a very big part of it. I mean, the Ruhr region has some really nice areas too. You know, I don't want to throw it all in one pot to Ruhr pot. It's Gelsenkirchen is definitely a lot rougher to live in than Dortmund, for example, right? Gelsenkirchen, I've been there. I personally would not want to live there. But maybe I'm pampered. I mean, I'm from Munich, right? I have a very different outlook on things. Now I live on the Canadian West Coast. I mean, like, obviously Gelsenkirchen is not for me. I don't want to say it's an ugly city, but it has a roughness to it, right? I think to maybe put it in context, it's probably very similar to Detroit, you know,
okay,
that kind of rust belt feel to it. You know, it's the Michigan of Germany with all very similar issues. And some cities in that area do better than others. Like Dortmund has reinvented itself, for example, right? You can even say the same about Essen. So there is money in that general region, but there's also a lot of football clubs in that general region, right? So you can't just like say, oh yeah, look, we're all like in this megapolis of 18 million people. Someone is going to invest us. Like in theory, like, you know, there's been former Schalke managers that have sort of claimed that, like, we are just as attractive as Berlin or Frankfurt or Munich or Stuttgart or Hamburg because we're like in this megapolis of 18 million people. It's like, well, you are, but, you know, these are still distinct, very much their own cities. They might have all grown together into this one huge thing, but they're still distinct own cities with their distinct separate football cultures, right? So, like, unless you are going tomorrow and you merge all those teams and make a mega FC Ruhrpott, there isn't really that much room, right? I mean, maybe you're seeing a development now where the region really only is going to support one or two teams, and that team could be Borussia Dortmund now because they're in the driver's seat, right? Because of Schalke's problems. It would be sad to see it, but there is a possibility that that could happen, that all the investment in that region is now going to flow to that one single club. It's possible. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's a difficult one because, like, where is that money going to come from? And
well, with that in mind, then, I won't even ask you to figure out where that money's going to come from because it sounds like there are various answers, all of them complicated. I will ask you another complicated question about Schalke. We can move on from them in a bit. But, like, what does success look like for them in the next couple of years? Given that relegation seems certain, they've got – I think Weston McKennie is no longer on loan. I guess that deal has been made permanent. They do still have Ozan Kabak, who could be made permanent. They have a few other players who could bring in some money. Are you expecting relegation clear out sort of any name that has any amount of dollar signs or euros next to it? And then we're going very academy, very bare bones squad?
Yeah, but I count as the question. Who in the squad still is worth any money?
Well, there's that.
I mean...
Let's go to your valuations, shall we? That's a beautiful feature of Transfer Market. Is it Transfer Market or Transfer Markt, by the
Transfer
way?
Transfer Markt, yeah.
Okay.
But Transfer Markt means Transfer Market, but I.
And while we're on the subject, I'm just going to keep jumping around before we get back to that question. Is there a way to change the currency on the site, or does it always have to be dollars if I'm in America?
You know, this is such a loaded question because that's something that we're debating internally right now. So stay tuned. it's a very, very complex question, as I've learned, because I've been at the company now for a year, right? And I thought this would be easier, but I don't want to bore people with the inner workings of our currency issue. But if you want euros, you can go to .com. If you want pounds, you can go to .co.uk. I personally, and I mean, I run a .us site, so please everyone go to your .us first, but the accurate sums are the euro sums.
Right,
because it's extremely difficult to switch currency on a daily basis, you know, because currency change every day, and that's very difficult to do on a massive database like ours. You have to remember we have a million players in our database, but all of them have market values. It's substantial, right? So
yeah. All right. Well, that's good to know. I didn't know the .com thing. I was on .us, so I think now I'll switch over it to give you the valuations. But it does seem like it's like the players you would maybe expect to have a little bit more of a price tag by them. It would be, I think, Suat Serdar and Amina Harit were the two most valuable ones, but then I guess Ozan Kabak would be part of that. So maybe those are the three that you could make some money off of.
Yeah, and I was actually asked a question today about Ozan Kabak and the finer workings of that deal. And I want to point out that Liverpool do not have an obligation to buy, right? So they can make the loan permanent if they want to, but they don't have to. You know, that's going to be up to Michael Edwards' evaluation, on Jurgen Klopp, of course, as well. Those two are going to probably make an evaluation at the end of the season. My feeling is that they are going to make that deal permanent because, you know, why else sign him for that amount of money and why else would Schalke agree to it? But they don't have to. And I think that's an important one to point out because, like, that was a question that I was faced with this morning. And I think it's interesting to note that Kabak, there is a chance that Kabak could return and that they might have to find another buyer for him, right? So there is a chance still that they could make money of him. My suspicion is, though, that they would probably get less money for him in a deal in the summer than what Liverpool would pay for them, like in the deal that's already agreed for, because, like, obviously he's now at Liverpool and I think he's doing reasonably well there for a young defender who basically went with no confidence to a club that is struggling with confidence. You know, everyone who followed Liverpool knows this. But yeah, just to point that out, there is no obligation to buy, but I do expect that they will exercise that option. So that's a little bit of money. McKennie, the deal is now official as of today, right? Juventus exercised their option. There's a great example because they didn't have to exercise that option either. It was an obligation to buy, I think, after a certain amount of games. And they opted to trigger that option early because he's been good there, right? He's been a good player for them. And I think it makes sense. It's a good investment for Juventus. And I think McKennie really benefited from it as well. And he looks like a player who will have a very good career at Juventus, which is fantastic. Juventus is one of the best teams in the world. So good for him. What I think is interesting is the fact that that deal is structured, right? It's a deal broken up into six different payments, I believe, of 3 million euros. And Dallas will get a certain percentage of that. So it's not like Schalke are getting all of a sudden this huge amount of money all at once. It's a deal that's going to come in triggering in small portions. So, you know, that's a little bit of money. Going through the squad, I mean, who do you capitalize on?
It's rough. I didn't realize how many people were on loan until I looked at that roster, and that's a big part of it. It's at least eight or nine names, and I would say starting names at that, including Kolasinac, including Mustafi, William Pacencia. I don't really know how to pronounce that one. I apologize for butchering it. But there are many names that will be gone due to them being on loan. No. It really does give you a pretty bare-bones squad overall.
I would say that Suat Seada, he's a current German national team player, so... Yeah. They'll probably get 20 million euros for him. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but, you know, top of my head, if you're a central midfielder, German national team player, 23 years old, pretty safe to say there's a market for you. So they'll probably get a decent amount of money for him. I reckon that they probably get a good amount of money for Amin Harit. Probably not as much as they expected when they first signed him for 8 million, but, you know, they're probably going to make a little bit of money for him. I would say between 10 and 15 million. Someone is going to pay that. Someone's going to take that risk because he is a good player fundamentally, right? And he just needs a good environment.
Yes.
And then...
He is a player. While you think on that one, I will agree with you and say I find him very good at times and very frustrating at times. Yeah. He does feel like a player who, if put into a kind of consistent system where he is playing regularly in the same spot and doesn't have a lot of rotation and doesn't have this player's there. Oh, no, he's been sold and this one's been loaned in, but he doesn't quite fit. I do think he maybe with some consistency around him finds more consistency himself. So I think, yeah, you're right. Suat Seada, Amin Harit. Anybody else who you think could maybe make them a little bit of cash?
Yeah, maybe Nito Rahman. Okay. But is he going to make them as much cash as they paid for when they signed him from Fortuna Düsseldorf, right? That's a very good question. And at what point do you say, okay, look, cash is great, but we need a side here that also gets promoted from Bundesliga 2. And that's not easy. Bundesliga 2 is, some would say, probably the best second division in the world. And we're looking at Hamburg. They've never gotten out of it. Heck, the result against St. Pauli suggests that they might not get out of it this year again, despite substantial investment, right? it's not an easy league to get out of, and you need a lot of quality to be successful in the second division. Because remember, in Germany, we only have 18 teams in the first division, and we have 18 teams in the second division, despite having the country with the biggest population in all of Europe, right? Which means there's a lot of very big clubs in those first two divisions. Heck, there's a lot of very big clubs in the third division. My club, 1860, is in the third division. Kaiserslautern is in the third division. Magdeburg, Dresden, Hansa Rostock, you know, these are former East German champions that are playing in the third division. You know, Magdeburg has won a European Cup. It's not like you're going down and it's like, okay, well, great. Now we're just going to invest, have this club that just went down, and because we're Schalke, we're going to go straight up. History suggests it's not that easy. And yeah. So you have to, it's a very fine line that they have to walk between having to raise money because of their obvious debt, but also having a squad that can actually be successful and go back up. And that's really difficult to achieve.
Final question, and we can make it, or final question about Schalke, I should say. We can make it a hypothetical, because I don't want to put you in too much hot water. But let's say you were advising somebody, like just picking a random name, Matthew Hoppe. Would you advise him to stay? Do you think it would be a good idea for a young forward with a little bit of Bundesliga experience to stay and get much more match experience with a weakened Schalke next year, where it does feel like he'll be a key performer for them? Or would you say maybe 19 years old, see if anybody's interested, see if the club have any interest in selling you?
Yeah, Matthew Hoppe has signed a new contract that also will keep him at the club at the second division. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of clubs were very keen on signing him. I want to use a word of caution when it comes to Matthew Hoppe. And I spoke to him a few weeks ago, I think a couple of weeks ago now, on the piece that's now up on Transfermarkt, right? And I know there was a few other journalists that also spoke to him. And the one article that stood out to me, and I don't want to bash the article because it's very well written, so I want to be very careful about how I word this. But did you see the whole glimmer of hope, Tyler?
No.
From the Sports Illustrated? It was the weekly feature, massive, like front page with him celebrating a goal, and it said the glimmer of hope, Matthew Hoppe, like glimmer of Hoppe, right?
I see.
Yeah. And I just thought to myself, this is getting into Freddie Adu territory here. We have to be careful, right? This is a 19-year-old kid we're talking about. He scored that hat trick, had a fantastic performance, has since scored another two goals. And the club is sort of to blame for this too. So I don't want to blame him. I also kind of think the club has to be really careful of what they're doing here, because it seemed like they almost tried to get the most out of the story, which, I mean, the Bundesliga has been trying, and you and I know this very well, to get big on the US market. So the story is a great US story, right? It is the sort of story that you need to PR. But you have to be also very careful. I'm talking about a 19-year-old kid that has played 13 games in the Bundesliga, has scored 5 goals in the Bundesliga. Before playing in the Bundesliga, played 16 games in Regionalliga, the fourth division, right, and scored 1 goal there. He was called up to the first team because he scored a couple goals against the first team in a training match. And we're not doing a young kid's development any favor by basically saying he's the glimmer of hope for Schalke, right? I think he would be well served in his development to go down with them and just play, and maybe also be out of the focus for a few months, maybe a year or so, because he's 19, right? Yep. We're talking about a good talent here, nothing more. And I think that's really where we are in his development. And, you know, once he goes up, look at how long Josh Sargent took in the Bundesliga, who I still think is a great player, but it takes time. This is one of the best leagues in the world. And, you know, every once in a while we have these stars that pop up. I mean, it kind of reminded me of the hype that we had with some North American stars. You know, the Tim Tebow comes to mind, or the Knicks player, Jimmy Lin. We're hyping them to the sky, and then it just collapses all onto them. And we have to be careful that we don't do that here. I think that's all I'm trying to say.
All right. I think that is a measured and responsible answer. I appreciate that. I would appreciate your perspective on the financials of some more Bundesliga clubs, because Schalke's financial situation, obviously compounded by the pandemic. I am assuming that is the case for a lot of other clubs, maybe Bayern being the exception because it's Bayern Munich. But which clubs do you think are in relatively strong positions, and which ones do you think are going to be needing to do some selling at a minimum this summer?
Yeah, so the Bundesliga, I did a piece on this based on the Deloitte findings, right? Their restart meant that they actually, of all the big sports leagues in Europe, they were the ones that got hit the least. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're all in dire financial problems, right? This pandemic has been not good for sports, period. But the Bundesliga got through this quite well because their restart was exceptional, right? And then the restart opened the doors for all the other major leagues around the world to come back. I mean, that's a fundamental truth. We wouldn't be covering sports right now if the Bundesliga hadn't said, let's try this, right? And did successfully relaunch and did manage to finish the season before anyone else did. And, you know, did it in a manner that was relatively safe. And it did secure the financial future of pretty much all the clubs. And surprisingly, it actually meant that we have an additional club now in the money league in Eintracht Frankfurt, right? Which bodes well for the league. I think the league has done quite well. The fact that they also were able to sign a television contract that is almost identical with the one that's previous. We all know no other league is going to be able to do this. Italy is having problems. France, you know, the mess with Media Pro has dominated the headlines there. A lot of clubs there are in huge problems, problems that are only surfacing now. I suspect the Premier League television deal will be less. So the league has actually done quite well. And it's hard to speak of winners in COVID, but I think they will be among the smaller losers. In that regard, if that makes any sense, right?
It absolutely does, and I think is well phrased. I'm going to keep it negative because why not? We'll eventually talk positive things. But Hertha Berlin have me confused because they don't feel like they should be struggling. They are presently, I think they're 15th, 18 points from 23 games. Net spend of $25 million this year, $100 million last campaign. Lucas Toussaint, Christophe Piontek, Jean Cordoba, to name a few coming in. Is this them sort of like sometimes when you get investment, you get new players coming in, it does require a little bit of time to get everybody into the system, to get everything figured out. Is that where they are? Are these necessary growing pains, or do you see problems there at Hertha?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It feels like the sugar daddy arrived, right? And the people that were in charge of the club were not well versed with dealing with the money that was all of a sudden available to them. And it kind of reminds you a little bit of the early days at City, doesn't it?
It does.
Right?
It does.
So I personally think that I'm not surprised that they are where they are, because you saw them sign a lot of players, but you didn't really necessarily see them sign the players in the positions that where they needed them the most. Mm-hmm. And it's also a lot of turnover, which is never good. You know, it's never good in any sport. And I think too that they're quite lucky that in Mainz and Schalke and Bielefeld, to a certain extent, there are just a few teams out there that are just so bad that, you know, they're just not in danger of necessarily going down. I know that in the table there are even on points with Bielefeld, but I'm pretty sure that Hertha will stay up. And it's an interesting one for me because I think they're going to stay up. And I think that there's a very good foundation there now that needs to still a lot of improvement, right? The turnover is far from being over. And I think that when Freddy Bobic, and it looks like it's going to be Freddy Bobic, arrives there, if he does even slightly what he did with Frankfurt, where he had no money, Hertha will be a very good club. But it does definitely seem like a lot of money was poured into, and the early investment just isn't quite, you know, there's like this old, it was all built on an old structure that just doesn't hold the new structure quite yet, right? And I think that's where Hertha are at the moment. They haven't quite been able to really make it all click because of all the things and players and personnel that was brought in.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So let's say Freddie Bobic comes in. His first call is to you, Manuel, whom he knows. You have a lot of experience with the Bundesliga. You've covered it. You know some things. What are the positions you're telling him to maybe strengthen most quickly? Not even necessarily the names, but where are the areas you think they haven't really invested wisely?
Yeah, I would say a center back for sure. Maybe a left back, maybe a right back. Although left back Luka Netz, there's a reason why Bayern Munich want him, right? He's very talented. So, they might need a left back because he might be gone to Bayern Munich. But maybe someone who is not just a working horse in defensive midfield, get some creativity in there. And maybe also just give these players some time to actually gel. That's, I think, another aspect that they need. And they need a couple of impact players as well. I think there's been a few players signed that where you think, okay, well, Piątek had a good year in Serie A, but hasn't really had the consistency since. John Córdoba had a great year at Cologne, but is he an impact player, right? Matheus Cunha, Brazilian national team player, wonderful player, scores highlight reel goals, but it's also hurt a lot. And is he someone who can lead that team? And, I think the idea with Sami Khedira was to bring in some leadership, but he's also old. So I think that's really where I would look. And I would just tweak it here and there because I think that the talent level is there, but I think there's just some pieces just missing that can just kind of glue it all together and make it a cohesive unit.
So Hertha are missing maybe that leadership that can bring the team together. I would argue so too are Borussia Mönchengladbach. I've been arguing Marco Rosa leaving for Dortmund at the end of the season wouldn't have that much of a negative impact on the squad. They're professionals. It's their last chance to win under him. They're going to kind of focus on the game at hand. Instead, since they announced he was leaving on February 15th, they drew 0-0 with Wolfsburg the day before. They've lost four straight, knocked out of the DFB Pokal. Seems like they're going to be knocked out of the Champions League as well. There are reports of fan unrest. Any chance you think we see Marco Rosa leave before the end of the campaign, given the way things have gone?
That's such an interesting question that we've been debating hotly on Gegenpressing, but also have been, talking about
it. I may have heard that, and it might be why I'm asking.
Various Bundesliga chats, yeah. It's such an interesting one because, when Dieter Hecking was let go, but was kept in charge until the end of the season, the club is sort of using that as an example of that it could work. But I think I would argue it's very different when the club says, okay, right at the end of the season, we're going to bring in a new head coach. Than when the head coach says he's leaving, because the players will play for a coach who was let go, right? And who was in favor with all the players. They will sort of, give everything for him until the end of the season, especially because Hecking was liked, which is why he stayed until the end of the season. But if you then a head coach who also, you look at poor Hannes Wolf, he was signed by Marco Rose, right? Brielle Mbolo signed by Hannes Rose. Like, there's a lot of players that went to the club because of their head coach. And then you are saying, well, I'm going to Dortmund. See you later. I'm abandoning the ship. That's a very different scenario. You can't compare that with what happened with Hecking. It's just not comparable, right? And then as a player, you're pissed. And I get it. And you hear all sorts of stories coming out of Mönchengladbach that the club refutes to be not true, right? They're saying it's not true. But you're hearing this stuff and you're saying, someone is spreading it. right? I mean, like, these things are not made up, or maybe if they exaggerated, it means there's still something happening. Like, some of the stuff that has been reported after Rosa made this decision, like, you couldn't have made that up, right? Like, there must be some truth to it, which suggests to me there is a lot of unrest. And I feel that he doesn't reach the players anymore. That's the sense I'm getting, that the players are not happy with his decision. And I mean, rightfully so. I get his decision too, you know, to go to Borussia Dortmund. He seemed destined for that job for quite some time. And I get it. You know, it's an opportunity that doesn't maybe come up for another few years after that. So fair enough. But maybe at that point, it would have been just easiest for Gladbach to say, okay, you want to leave? Leave. And for Dortmund to say, okay, you take over right now. That's would have probably been the best decision.
What mechanism, like, what would require that to happen now? I'm assuming they would have to change the kind of terms of the deal, probably means more compensation from Dortmund, but yeah. Could they theoretically get that done?
Well, the exit clause is not due till like summer, right? And they've triggered that. And in fairness, that's how Gladbach got him in the first place, because he had an exit clause at Salzburg, and they triggered that and bought him out of his contract using the exit clause. And essentially the same exit clause, I think it's 8 million euros, is now used by Dortmund, but it's not due to the summer. So for to cause this sort of unrest and upheaval to bring Rosa over would probably cost Dortmund a little bit extra money. But I think that would have been the cleanest thing to do.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it would certainly solve some Dortmund problems, because they don't seem to have the permanent situation in place, definitely. Mm-hmm. It seems like Gladbach also not doing particularly well at the moment. Maybe they should just swap for now. Let's send Terzic over to Gladbach. I'm sure that would solve everything.
Well, in fairness, Dortmund have been very good in recent weeks. You know, they seem to have turned a switch, which is, I mean, hilarious. You know, Dortmund under Terzic could reach the Champions League, finish top four, win the DFB Pokal, and then hire a guy who probably has not reached the Champions League, gone out of the DFB Pokal in the quarterfinals, and got kicked out by Man City. Looks like the likely scenario right now.
All right. Well, while Dortmund debate their decisions, I'll ask you this. It feels like this is a, not uniquely, but a common thing in Germany, where you have both players and managers announcing intentions to move, to change clubs, to demand changes, like, well ahead of time. I think it goes back to Lothar Matthäus doing that, again, for Gladbach to move to Bayern. That was back in the 80s. I think there are lots of other examples, even players moving to the Bundesliga from other clubs. Yerdan Shaqiri, I think, was announced well in advance. And then Julian Nagelsmann manages an entire season at Hoffenheim when everybody knows he's leaving. Why is that more common in Germany? Or maybe more accurately, is that more common in Germany? And if so, do you have any ideas as to why it might be?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because Stefan Binkowski brought that up on the podcast this week, right? And I just kind of thought to myself, like, oh, I thought it was like that everywhere, but maybe it's not. You know,
I can't tell. I guess that's what I mean, because it is always the case that if you're within 6 months of your contract expiring, if you get to the January before the summer, you can negotiate. And we do see that. I just wonder if maybe there's a confirmation bias or whatever, where it's like, I notice it more with Bundesliga teams, and therefore to me it happens more often.
And it's gotten more extreme. It's gotten more extreme, I feel. Like Nagelsmann saying like entire year before that he's going to leave. Okay, and a lot of eyebrows was raised at the time. And in fairness, I don't think the experiment worked, because Hoffenheim finished eighth. You know, it wasn't like they had the best year ever. They certainly didn't. And it's an interesting one, because you think that, okay, maybe this could work, being honest and transparent and all that kind of stuff. Right. I mean, if you want to leave, leave and do a clean break. I think that's you serving the interests better. I mean, we now have this entire thing with Bobic, right? Where he hasn't confirmed that he's going to Hertha, you know, but he's confirmed now that he's going to leave at the end of the season. And Eintracht Frankfurt were very well on course on being a Champions League. Now you have this upheaval and you have no clarity. I don't know what the best course is. Like, is it maybe better to just say, like, yeah, I'm leaving at the end of the season. I'm going to ensure that there's a successor, and I'm going to join this club. Clean break, right? Or do you say right away, okay, like, I'm leaving at the end of the season, bye. But then do you go as a club and say, okay, well, in that case, it's probably best that we're going to go separate ways right now, right away, right? It's a difficult one to answer because like I feel like every situation is different and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And look, Edin Terzic is making the most out of it in Dortmund. Yeah, he had a slow start, but I mean, an argument could be made that maybe Dortmund should have competed for the Bundesliga title, but that Bundesliga title was gone when Favre was fired. Let's be honest here. I mean, they were so far behind Bayern and Leipzig that that title was gone anyway. So he will finish in the top four. They look very good up against Sevilla. I assume they will go through there. And, you know, the Champions League is an odd one this year because of COVID. I mean, we don't know where home games are going to be. Are we going to have a final tournament? Look at Leipzig last year. They reached the semifinal. Who knows, right? Who knows? So it's going relatively well for him. You just don't know. It's like, I think it's a case by case thing. And when I look at Rose, I'm looking at a case where it's not working. It's obviously not working, right? The players are not happy. There is obviously some problems between the board, Ebal and Rose. You see the hate that Rene Maric, who I actually think is a wonderful person, is getting in social media right now because he had the audacity to talk to Erling Haaland after that Bokal match, right? A player that he used to coach at Salzburg and are friends with, and who's, because he's already prepping the enemy, right? Right. And that's an example where I say like, okay, well, maybe clean break, right? Because it's only going to get worse.
What about, hear me out, three-way swap. Rosa to Dortmund, Terzic to RB Salzburg, Jesse Marsch to Gladbach.
I think I solved it. I think Terzic has a future at Borussia Dortmund in Marco Rose's team. So
fine.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting who is going to be the next head coach at Gladbach, because I know that they approached Adi Hütter and Adi Hütter is going to stay in Frankfurt.
Yeah, he ruled himself out, right?
Yeah, he ruled himself out, which, I mean, fair enough. And Frankfurt could finish in the top four or top five, right? They're going to be in Europe, and Bobic or not, this is a club with a big future. And I think that Frankfurt are a sleeping giant and they have been slowly waking up over the last few years, you know, with winning the cup. Consistently finishing in that top echelon, and they're only really one Champions League appearance away from being a giant in German football, just because of the size of the city, the people that work there, right? You and I have been to Frankfurt.
We have.
Yeah, it feels like a club that is just waiting to wake up, right?
And I have a very silly question about Frankfurt on that note. We talked a little bit about like Gelsenkirchen, like is reflected in Schalke. There's a little bit of that. Like Frankfurt, as I understand it, is a financial like city. It's very much rooted in the
giant,
financial industry.
Right.
Yeah. Is that reflected in the way Frankfurt operates? Like, do Eintracht Frankfurt like sort of do a good job in their business? Are they reflective of the sort of financial acumen within that city?
And Frankfurt is such an interesting place, right? Because it has that financial power, but the financial power, similar to what's the case in the London city, right? Wakes up in the morning, drives to Frankfurt, works in Frankfurt, leaves the office in the evening, and then drives back to Bad Hanau or wherever, you know, one of those like suburbs that are very rich, and the city is very much working class, right? So you have that very strong contrast. Having said that, I do get the sense that the financial powers in Frankfurt are slowly waking up to the fact that they have a club like Frankfurt in the city. And I think, you know, you see it now with the stadium, first Commerzbank Arena, now Deutsche Bank Arena, right? The amount of money that is being put into the stadium. I think the financial institutes in Frankfurt are waking up to the fact that there is a club operating in their city limits that is now well run and that could represent them very well. And I think when that moment happens, when those two synergies collide, then Frankfurt will be a top four team forever in Germany. You know, it will be a contender in European football. It's just waiting for that kiss to wake it up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they're so close. And I think Bobic has to be credited for that because he got them to that level. And I think he may be recognizing now that he might not be able to get them any further, that it might need some new input to get them over that final hump. Which is fair enough. If he recognizes this and this is his reason to leave, then fair enough, right? But I feel like they're so close and they are such a natural opposite pole to what Munich have, right? Because of that financial power that Frankfurt have. And I think this is a city that's just waiting to have a major European club.
All right. So we have one potential top four team that are well run. We have another one, I would say, in the form of Wolfsburg, currently third in the table. They've scored the fewest goals of any team in the top six, but they've also conceded the fewest in the entire league. So that's pretty good. How good is that defense? Why is it so good? And how much credit should we give to John Brooks? Should it be 99% of the credit or just fully 100% of the credit?
What do the listeners want to hear?
Probably like 104%, probably.
Yeah, well, let's do that.
But yeah, we should talk about them because I think like Joe and I did a sort of Americans Abroad recap a couple weeks ago, and we noticed John Brooks like diving into a challenge, getting beat, and I think a goal comes directly from it. We were critical. We had a few listeners point out that this has been a very strong defensive pairing that haven't actually conceded many goals and have been pretty solid throughout. So I did want to ask about that defense.
Well, in fairness, Lacroix has been amazing this season.
Oh, I see. So you're giving him 104% of the credit.
Not saying that. I'm just saying he's probably been one of the biggest revelations in German football. You know, a talented defender, ball-moving defender, who's been very, very good. Having said that, John Anthony Brooks is getting a ton of credit from the people that run Wolfsburg.
Hmm.
And I think that is... Because he's a solid stay-at-home defender, right? And he allows someone like Lacroix to play his game the way he plays. And then that's a very important attribute to have. And we shouldn't dismiss that at all. And Wolfsburg have been very good this year. I mean, they are, as we record, they're playing a quarterfinal against Leipzig in a few minutes' time, right? And I think that that's going to be a very interesting game to watch because it's going to be interesting to see how they're doing against one of those big teams. But yeah, I think that, I mean, Wolfsburg look like they're going to finish in the top four, right? Because they haven't slipped up yet, like Frankfurt have last week. And I think that one of Frankfurt or Wolfsburg will have to make way for Borussia Dortmund. And it does look a little bit more like Frankfurt at the moment over Wolfsburg. So they could finish in the top four. And here's a place that Wolfsburg is an interesting one because, you know, the joke is always the best part about Wolfsburg is the 1 hour train ride to Berlin, which is sort of true. I'm not going to lie, but it's also a place that has Volkswagen in their back, you know, the world's largest car manufacturer. And it's 100% financed by the world's largest car manufacturer. And you just feel like all they need is really a justification for spending money. And Champions League football certainly does give you the justification of spending a lot of money. And you kind of feel like they're only a step away from that as well. And that's a good team right now. Oliver Glasner has done a very good job putting this team together with Jörg Schmadtke and Marcel Schäfer, who a lot of US listeners will be familiar to because he played for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, right? And they've done a fantastic job there.
Who are the, aside from Brooks and Lacroix? Aside from those two, who else would you say have been critical or will be critical to Wolfsburg staying in the top four?
Yeah, definitely Ludwig Horst, right?
Yeah.
You need a good striker.
Right.
Yeah, he's doing all right. 14 goals. it's kind of hard. I mean, you're looking at a league where Robert Lewandowski has scored 28 goals and is now the world's best player officially, right? But then you have like a guy like Andre Silva and you're like, wow, he's very good.
and you
kind of keep forgetting about people like Ludwig Horst. And I mean, like we're saying Andre Silva is pretty good. He's ahead of Erling Haaland, right? There's a lot of good strikers in this league. So we shouldn't forget about Ludwig Horst. He's a very good player.
He just seems very consistent to me. I was looking at his numbers through the years, and it's always like 15-ish or more goals, like for every club he's played for. It seems like he just kind of routinely scores and does that.
Yeah,
with the consistency and reliability you would want of a top four team.
It would kind of. I mean, it does. It's kind of mean, really, right? Because you're playing in a league with Robert Lewandowski. I mean, if he was in Italy or England, he'd be one of the top three strikers at the moment with his output. But yeah, he's unfortunately in Germany with Robert Lewandowski and Erling Haaland, who are like, hugging all the headlines. I mean, poor André Silva, who's probably one of the best strikers in the world right now, is not getting any even much attention. And then there's like Wout Weghorst, who was playing in Wolfsburg, right? Was super consistent. But yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, you are in a league with Erling Haaland and Robert Lewandowski, who every weekend shoot the lights out. That's just the reality of it. And they're not just doing it in the Bundesliga. They also do it in Europe. You know, they're just like scoring goals after goals after goals. I mean, their output has been scary. So yeah, we don't give Wout Weghorst enough credit because he's a very good striker. He'd probably be a top three striker in any other European league at the moment because, you know, his output is just very, very consistent.
I wanted to ask you, I have two more questions. One of them is about another sort of, not disrespected, but a player who doesn't get as much hype. But first, I wanted to ask you about a player who definitely does in the form of Jadon Sancho. His form has definitely improved of late, scored in each of their last three games, looked solid in their Champions League win over Sevilla. In my mind, he was not playing very well to start the season. It wasn't quite of that same form. It wasn't the electrifying combination with Erling Haaland. That seems to have returned. What do you think accounts for that turnaround?
Yeah, Jadon Sancho, I think we all are aware of what was going on last summer. Mm-hmm. And he's 20 years old. You know, I think it's quite natural that when you are in that age, you start thinking. And it's also quite natural to have periods of inconsistency in your play when you're that age. And I mean, I'm now having this Twitter thing where every match day I'm essentially like, oh, Jadon Sancho is now 12 goals and 16 assists in 31 games, right? And that number keeps growing and growing. It's quite remarkable. I mean, he's 21 games now, 6 goals, 11 assists in the Bundesliga. That's not bad.
No.
And that number is only going to go up because of what you've pointed out, right? I mean, in the Champions League, it's 2 goals and 3 assists after a slow start. He's been in very good form. He's been quite excellent. And I get the sense now that he is really enjoying playing for Dortmund. I thought it was really telling the reactions that you had from Erling Haaland and Jadon Sancho after the Revier Derby. You know, the derby having been played without fans. And the way the two of them celebrated it in particular, I thought it was quite telling and quite showed a lot that they don't just treat this place as a place that they're like, you know, they're going to play in a few years and then they're just going to move on. I think there's more to the story here. And it kind of makes you wonder that what will happen if Dortmund finish in the top four? I think, you know, Haaland will stay 100% if Dortmund finish in the top four. There's no way, especially now that there's apparently talks, stories emerging that his exit clause in 2022 is a lot higher than initially thought. And with Sancho, I mean, he's under contract until 2023. There is no hurry to sell him this summer, right? The team that was the most interested in him, Manchester United, seem to have moved on. There is talks and suggestions about Chelsea. And that's a different story than entirely. I know that Thomas Tuchel would like to add him, but he'll probably have to sell a few wingers first because there's a bunch of them under contract at Chelsea. So it really begs the question, what is going to happen to Jadon Sancho in the summer if Dortmund reach top four? I think it will be an interesting one to watch because I was certain that this was his last season in Dortmund. But if they finish top four, I wouldn't necessarily bet my house on it.
All right. Marco Rosa is definitely hoping they finish top four then to keep both of those players there. So we're not sure what will happen with Dortmund, with Wolfsburg, with Frankfurt. It feels pretty safe to say that Bayern Munich are going to qualify for the Champions League. It also feels pretty safe to say they're probably going to win the title.
I wouldn't bet my house on that.
You think?
No.
All right. It's 2 points right now separating them and Leipzig?
Yeah, and it's a classic on the weekend.
I'm excited, Manuel. That was the noise of me being excited. But I do have one last question for you before I go think about that one. Bayern Munich crushed Köln 5-1 this past weekend. Lewandowski scored a brace, which is, I believe, now required by German law. Hansi Flick singled out Leon Goretzka, though, in his post-match comments. And that's a player who I feel like you mentioned him earlier when we were talking Schalke, but he's one who, when it comes to Bayern, I think – at least on this show, we don't ever really talk about him. We talk about Thomas Müller and Joshua Kimmich and obviously Lewandowski. We don't talk about the kind of strengths of Goretzka and what he brings to that team. So I wanted to ask you how important you think Leon Goretzka is for the current Bayern Munich.
Oh, he's very important. I think there's probably three or four players that Bayern cannot replace. You know, there's a bunch of players where they can just rotate in and out. But there's a spine at the club, you know, starts with Neuer, Kimmich, Goretzka, Thomas Müller, and Lewandowski. And that's the very, very foundation that this 11 is built on. And you see it. One of them is gone. You know, they're still very good. Bayern Munich are very good at football. This is something that I don't want to, we talk about all their weaknesses and all that. And, look at they're slipping up here and they're dropping points there. And then they go into Champions League and they destroy some top team from some other European league. And you're like, I guess they are pretty good. Maybe I'm just used to it, you know, like, because I watched that Lazio game and I was like, oh, I don't know. Bayern have a lot of weaknesses. How is that going to go against an Italian defense? I'm like, wow.
It went all right.
It went all right. I mean, this could have been double digits if they wanted it to be, you know, like, and then I realized like, wow. Then you realize how good teams like Bielefeld are, and you know that I have taken points of them, right? Or Frankfurt, when their performance against Bayern Munich, how good that performance actually was. Because it seems like in German football, we don't quite appreciate it anymore until we see them do it against some poor team from London or Rome or Spain, right? And just absolutely go and dismantle them. And I think that's, there's a couple points to be made about this. I think it underlines that the Bundesliga is maybe stronger than a lot of people think, but it also shows that Bayern are just very good at football, but it also shows how important some of these players are for Bayern. And if they're not on the field, they're probably still good enough to beat you, but they are fundamentally weaker for it, right? And Leon Goretzka he brings structure and strength to the play. I think Kimmich organizes this at all, but it's Goretzka has that ability to bring possession and power to the pitch like no one else does. And there is certain, what I find really fascinating when you talk and look at certain players and their abilities, they all bring something to the game that allows them to play a certain position, but they all interpret the position very differently than, you know, the position is actually supposed to be played. And that's the case. I mean, Robert Lewandowski is not a full out number nine. He could also be a playmaker, right? Thomas Müller has long time ago given up on even trying to play like a number 10. He's just invented a new position for him altogether. Goretzka is this roaming power number 8, maybe. Kimmich is a playmaker who plays as a central defender. And Manuel Neuer is a sweeper keeper. I mean, like that's so hard to calculate if you're an opponent because you know in what positions they are playing, but they all interpret their positions so very differently. And I think that's really what brings the strength to this particular side, that you have certain players. I mean, you can go take this even further and look at Alphonso Davies. Like, he's not a left back. Are you kidding me? He's just playing on that position. And I find that really interesting that Bayern Munich, like no other team, have really been able to do that, that they're finding these players that they occupy a certain position on a piece of paper, but they interpret it very different than any other player in the world would do. And they're doing it on a level that is not reached by anyone at the moment. You know, maybe City. I am really curious to see how they would do against City. I think that is the one club that could maybe be dangerous for them in Europe. But yeah, it's like Goretzka has been phenomenal. And, you know, there's been so many players for them where you just look and you don't really notice it until they're not there. And you realize like, yeah, this player is actually phenomenal. This player is world class. Like, what are we talking about here? This is a player who, you know, who's doing things on the field that we haven't seen previously. And that's incredible.
All right. So the takeaway from this interview can be some good times for some Bundesliga clubs, less so for others. For you, Manuel, what have you got going on? Where can people read more from you, hear more from you?
Yeah, you can find all my stuff pretty much on Transfermarkt. Uh-huh. I still do the contributions for Forbes. So I'm doing more longer articles, more on the financial aspects of stuff for Forbes. We got the Gegenpressing podcast. So if you want your weekly Bundesliga fix, we're on pretty much we're everywhere. We're on Spotify, iTunes. I don't know what else is out there, Tyler. You can find it. Wherever you can listen to podcasts, we are on it.
Any podcast, anywhere you can find it. There we go. All right. Yeah. Well, Manuel, thank you so much. I will let you go so you can watch some knockout games in Germany. But for now, thank you once again for taking the time.
Oh, this was wonderful. Anytime.
Appreciate it very much. Listeners, thank you all for listening. And we will talk to you all again very soon.
Cheers.